This is Karen Testerman on We Hold These Truths, and my guests, Kathy Rago, Area Coordinator of the Network for Educational Choice, and Doris Hohensee with the New Hampshire Families for Education. There's an all-out assault on our Constitution, and specifically our Second Amendment, that protects and ensures the other rights secured in the Bill of Rights. During Black History Month, Star Parker, president of Urban Cure, the Center for Urban Renewal and Education, brought Black leaders together to make their statement about the importance of the Second Amendment to the Black community. Prior to her many accomplishments as a speaker and commentator, Star is known because she had firsthand experience for 7 full years in the grip of welfare dependency. Today, she promotes market-based policies to fight poverty. Let's listen to a short clip from the Black Leaders press conference speaking out against gun control.
I want to thank the NRA for its legacy. The National Rifle Association was founded by religious leaders who wanted to protect free slaves from the Ku Klux Klan. They would raise money, buy arms, show the free slaves how to use those arms, and protect their families. God bless you. Many of us probably wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for the NRA.
But let me just briefly say that gun control, for Black Americans, we know that gun control has ultimately been about people control. It sprouts from racist soil, be it after the or during the infamous Dred Scott case, where Black man's humanity was not recognized. And the beauty about some racists is that sometimes they're blatantly honest. And the racist Chief Justice Taney said, "We cannot allow the law to recognize the humanity of this individual because he would be able to keep and bear arms." What a lot of Democratic-controlled segregationist governments after the Civil War attempted to deny Black men and women their freedom. They instituted Black codes, largely to deny the Second Amendment from newly freed slaves.
That was a clip from a press conference that Star Parker from Center for Urban Renewal put together of Black leaders talking about the fact that we need and should appreciate the Second Amendment in our country, and that the whole reason for the NRA was really to enable them to be able to defend themselves, which is a piece of history most people don't know.
That's interesting. I had never heard that before, yes.
And we're so excited, too, because Star Parker is actually coming to New Hampshire. She'll be here with the New Hampshire Federation of Republican Women, their annual Lilac Luncheon, which is on, that'll be on May 20th. So if you're interested in coming to hear her, be sure to mark that, save that date, May 20th at noontime. It'll be at the Crown Plaza here in Nashua, and we're really excited that she's going to be the keynote speaker for that event. So, yeah. Doris, you came in to talk to us about some more education bills. What else is up in front of the legislature?
There's a new bill. It's House Bill 479, and it's going to go up for a vote next Wednesday on the House floor. And the Education Committee has panned it and said it should be killed. And essentially what it allows us to do is restore the local control in our district system that we used to enjoy. I mean, now we've got one federal program hitting us after the next. The current one is Common Core. But this undermines the ability of our teachers to work with the parents and the local students to craft an individual curriculum that might help those students. Now we all have top-down districts. So this would allow parents to opt out of their district, create a new district, or select a district that respects their educational goals, allowing the existing districts to continue, take their federal funds, take their federal programs, and take Common Core. I mean, if it's as good as No Child Left Behind that we're now all submitting waivers for, I don't know that it's a good bet, but live and let live if they want to do it. And it's an expensive program. They have to put in online systems. The whole curriculum is online. They're online testing. If that's what they want to do, so be it. But let's let parents and members of the community work together to create decentralized schools if that's what they want. So return to what worked in the 1800s, what built this state.
You make a really good point. Once we've gone through an experiment, and many of our government programs are in fact that they're experiments, and we found that they're not effective, like the Department of Energy that was supposed to get us off of oil. I think that we should be bold and are adult enough, if we want to put it that way, to be able to say, you know, this program didn't work, so let's go back to what did work.
Well, they put all our eggs in one basket. Now we're going with Common Core, which is completely untested.
It's not only is it untested, I'm convinced that it's also an extension of what was Goals 2000 that we voted down in the state and yet was snuck back in the form of school to work. And, you know, the top down, it has never worked. And we know that the best education, as the homeschoolers have demonstrated, is when you can do it at the more local the level of educating your children, the better off we are.
The more enthusiasm the teacher brings to what they're teaching, yes. That enthusiasm will transfer to the students. But if the teachers are forced or instructed to do this top-down approach, I mean, it doesn't give any innovation or creativity. It loses everything. But I don't even follow the details between Goals 2000, No Child Left Behind, and Common Core, because the particulars are irrelevant. The whole point is centralization. We now have a national curriculum. They don't call it that, but that's what we have. We have a uniform national curriculum. Is that what we want? Is the potential of danger in there something that we're willing to accept, that all our students swim or sink at the same time? Why not the diversity? Isn't that what we're supposed to do, respect diversity? Well, let's have a little. Plus, if you create these districts and the newer ones say, okay, I'm not going to take the mandates or the federal funds, all that money goes back to the pot and available for all the existing districts. So they have more federal money and state funding. They should be delighted. But no, they want to stamp it out. We can't have choice.
So it's come out of committee, inexpedient to legislate. What can our listeners do if they want to help reinstitute this law?
Well, the first thing they should do is contact their House representatives or any ones that they know, as many as they know, and tell them that parents matter, teachers matter. Let's empower them to work together. I mean, why do they're educated, they're trained, they're fully competent to train our students. Why do they have to listen to some federal mandate to say, okay, here's your handcuffs, you've got to work within these parameters? There are teachers that are quitting, that they can't take it. There are parents that are pulling their students out, but not everybody can afford to do that. So you've got the homeschoolers on the one hand that are doing that. You've got charter schools that we get in by lottery, and there's very few of them. There's the tax scholarships that are wonderful for the less affluent, but again, that's even a smaller percentage of our students. Why not let any parent in any town get together with their residents in their community and form a new district? And they're laughing at the number, because in 1800s, it only took the petition of 10 residents. They're saying, that's ridiculous. You need bigger. Well, we don't want to create huge districts. I mean, if you say that we need 450 signatures, I mean, do we need that many students? I mean, because then you've got a huge school when you're just starting out. Homeschoolers have shown that it doesn't take a lot of infrastructure to educate a child, to enthusiastically motivate him. So start small. Go back to what worked. Then they had 10 signatures, a written petition from 10 residents, and there were penalties on the selectmen if they didn't implement that petition. First they chided them, and then they actually put a financial amount to say, if you don't let them create this district, you will be personally penalized and fined. And there were 2,600 school districts in New Hampshire. Now we have 100 or so.
Well, and 2,600, and where were we on the literacy scale, and where were we on the education scale compared to other states, we were at the top, right?
All states use this, and we were all on the top, yes.
Right. I keep going back to pre-1940 when, well, actually it was in the 1930s that we introduced this look-say sight reading method of education. And prior to that time, the literacy rate in this country was 99%.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're down to below 50%, which is, you know, it's staggering. And since that, we've created the State Department of Education, and we've created the National Department of Education, and we're still falling off the scale when compared to other countries, when compared to each other. We're all constantly falling down that literacy scale.
The only thing we've accomplished is we've gone from decentralized school districts to a very uniform, centralized program that covers the whole country.
And it's a massive part of our overall budget.
Yes.
And if we really are serious about cutting budgets, I still keep going back to the fact that there are departments that are not only unconstitutional, but they've also been proven on the metric scale not to work. So if we've got these things and they're not working, then it's time that we got rid of them, and maybe we could actually balance our budget.
Well, in Nashua, we've got all of our schools are in need of improvement, based on this last federal program, and it's soon to be replaced with the new federal program. We used to have 11 districts in Nashua. We now have one mega district. I mean, that's wonderful if it's working for your child, but some children might benefit from a little bit different approach. And why not live and let live and let those districts, you know, set up without a lot of overhead and bureaucratic control? It used to be you put in the petition and you didn't ask permission from your school board, because then you're subordinate to that school district. You didn't ask the state for permission because you had Article 6 said that you were independent from state interference. Those were decentralized school districts. You only put into your selectmen because, like the ministers back then, they used to support the ministers. You are reallocating your portion of the school portion of your property tax to the new district, just like they reapportioned their ministry or supporting the ministry to the new church that they belonged. So it was a function of going to the clerk, changing your district or changing your church so that your funding would go to the one that you now participate in.
Well, and now, if you don't know who your state legislator is, you can go to GenCourt, GenCourt.state.nh.us, and on the left-hand side, you'll see a place that says Find Your Legislator, and so you can click on that, put in your town, and it will automatically come up and tell you who your legislator are. And when you do, then you'll like to send a simple email to support HB
House Bill 479.
479. And if you if you're at all interested in helping this along, are there other bills?
No, there's other bills that Kathy could address, but this is the main. This is choice for everybody. There's other limited choices that are also good programs that are on the books that they're trying to repeal with this session, which are good to defend.
Right. As a matter of fact, it's the bill that will repeal the recently enacted law of these K-12 scholarships recently passed the House, HB 370, and it is going to the Senate. So I would ask everyone to contact their senators, and the way to reach them is the same website.
GenCourt.state.nh.us. And look for the Find Your Legislator.
Your senator.
And, well, that'll actually give your senator in it. When you put in your town, it actually comes up and it tells you who your representatives are and who your senator is.
All right,
so
awesome.
And then when you click on the name, it actually takes you to their page and all of their information. So it's fairly simple to use. It's GenCourt.state.nh.us.
Yes, so if you can, that would be quite wonderful. We need to reach out to the senators and just explain to them why we need to keep this bill in law. As a matter of fact, Senator Stiles is not supporting the repeal simply because she feels like it is flip-flop legislation, as it just came into law January 1st and would like to see it work. So we, as representatives of the Network for Educational Opportunity, would also like to see the bill work, give it a chance to work, and then look at it again if they want in a year or two and see the results.
Right. At least have a chance. We don't even at this point have any measurable statistics to be able to say it did or did not work.
Correct. We don't have any, and we've actually already have over 450 children that have applied for scholarships.
Which is phenomenal, and you're working on getting businesses to actually make contributions. So there is no state money involved, which is
correct.
Another factor in this whole thing.
Right. I think it's disingenuous of the opponents of this particular legislation to continually pound the pavement that this is a voucher bill when, in fact, it is not a voucher bill. So I don't know if they're just ignorant or they're being dishonest, because this does not take money out of the government coffers.
It's to discredit the effort, I think, because vouchers are not, they're not constitutional. Therefore, if we label it something that isn't reputable, that it's easier to knock it down.
Right. And Doris brings up a really important factor. Words have been so taken over and misused in many situations in many campaigns around the country. It's really important to turn around and say to someone when they say, well, we think this is a voucher bill, then turn around and say to them, what does that mean to you? What is a voucher to you? And where does the money come from? And start to make those questions out there, because when we know what it is we're talking about and we're all on the same page, then we can have a real honest discussion about the issue. Where right. So many times I know I have a different definition for different things than other people do. I have one in mind that I probably shouldn't bring up at this point, but because we can really go into a wild discussion on it. But in reality, let's start asking them, what is it you mean? And then let's get on the same page.
And when you do that, the other thing is, as you're asking what a voucher means to them, ask them about the CDFA, the 75% tax credit that is available, Community Development Financing Authority, that is currently in law.
Well, thank you so much, Kathy Rago and Doris Hohensee, for joining us on We Hold These Truths. This is Karen Testerman, and we will be with you again next week.